Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our next Regeneration podcast. Today, we start a bit differently, as we used to do.
Yeah, that's right. It does sound a bit different. Well, after 18 episodes and more than a year of discussions with interesting guests, we thought it was time to renew the format and shake things up a bit, right?
Absolutely. What a better occasion than the start of a new year and of a new podcast season.
But don't worry, it's still us who are hosting the show. I'm Elena Calciolari, I'm an associate professor at Queen Mary University of London and University of Parma, and I work as a periodontist with expertise in tissue regeneration.
And I am Anina Zürcher. I'm a senior lecturer at the University of Zurich. I am a specialist in prosthodontics, and I have always been interested in oral regeneration and implantology.
How did your story with the Osteology Foundation start, Anina?
My story started when I became a scholar in London 2021. And how about you, Elena?
Well, my story with the Osteology Foundation dates back to when I did the Research Academy in Kiel in 2014. So what do we want with this podcast?
We aim to discuss and talk about relevant topics in the field of oral tissue regeneration and also to offer novel perspectives that have relevance for the young generation.
And for this, we invite guests from around the world each month.
Elena, the topic of today's episode is about stem cells and oral regeneration. How did you come up with this great idea to have an episode about this topic? Please tell me more about it.
Well, Anina, you know, I see so many articles coming out on the use of stem cells in the field of oral regeneration. And I'm very curious to hear where we are in this field and what is the current state of the art.
Yes, I completely agree with you, Elena. And I have also read some recent papers about this topic. So who is our guest today?
Well, I invited Danaya Patsidu, who is associate professor at the Department of Preventive Dentistry, Periodontology and Implant Biology at Aristotle University of Thessaloniki. And one of her main research interests is exactly about the use of stem cells to promote tissue regeneration. So I'm very eager to know from her what's happening in this field. So a warm welcome, Danaya. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. I thank you.
Also from my side, dear Danaya, we are so happy that you are here today with us in our episode, in our podcast. So, you know, we are always interested a bit about the person, of course, and, you know, the story behind it. Why and what was the story? Why you became so interested in this topic?
Well, that is a nice story because at that time, my professor, Antonis Konstantinidis, who retired after, brought us together with my collaborator, Dr. Bakopoulou, and he suggested, he trusted in us that we will do some innovative technique. Well, we didn't really know until he explained that his vision is to reconstruct periodontal defects by using tissue engineering. And he fully trusted us in this project that we will bring it to an end. And so we did.
Okay.
Oh. So it's always interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, but sorry to interrupt, but I was wondering, because when we talk about stem cells, it's like, let's say, an umbrella term. So is every stem cell the same? Or maybe can you tell us a little bit more about the different potential, different differentiation capacity? So just we understand a little bit more this very complicated field of cell therapy and stem cell therapy.
Well, that is a very good question because there is a huge amount of heterogeneity and variability in what we actually do. And in fact, stem cells are seemingly similar because they are important in the growth and development of the body and they repair a tissue after injury. But when we look into the different subcategories, they are In fact, they're uniquely different. For example, let's take the hematopoietic stem cells. They reside in the bone marrow, and these produce all the lines of blood, the cell lines of blood. And the mesenchymal stem cells are a little bit different because they can be found in various tissues and sites of the body, but have somehow different production, different differentiation potential, and they produce fat, they produce skin or gingiva, they produce they can produce muscles and various other tissues other than blood cell lines. And if I'm allowed, if you look into the mesenchymal stem cells, there are different subcategories. For example, there is debate in the literature whether the stem cells that originate from fat can produce bone. So yes, they are uniquely different by all means.
Okay. So, I mean, there is an umbrella term, and then whatever kind of direction you want to go, you pick then one stem cell or the other stem cells. Is that right?
Anina, that is a good observation because the literature has given us an advantage to know which source of cells, of stem cells, is best for a given clinical application.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I'm completely new in this topic. So I have another question. Regarding the cells itself, so I guess there is a mechanism behind it. And can you tell us a bit more how they interact with each other and also how they work with each other?
Well, you know, there is long research in the domain of stem cells. And we think that we understand their function and how they interact with the resident cells. But in fact, their actual mechanism of action is not fully clarified, is not fully determined. So what we know about stem cells is that they crosstalk with the host cells and they have immunomodulatory effects, so they control inflammation, and also they are trophic, so they promote regeneration. And how do they do that? By secreting various bioactive agents and molecules, and they crosstalk with the resident host cells, stem cells, to promote regeneration. So it is very well said that instead of mesenchymal stem cells, they should be called medicinal signaling cells.
Okay, so there is somehow a direct way how they work to eat with each other, and also somehow an indirect way. So there is a signal.
Yes, Anina, the indirect way seems to dominate and to predominate, and is mainly the mode of action rather than transforming into the tissue producing cell. They talk with the resident cells and they trigger them for them to produce the actual tissue, the cells that are needed.
Okay, so they create a sort of the, let's say, good environment for regeneration to take place, if I understand it right.
Very, very correct.
Okay, and going back to what you said about, you know, the different types of cells, I understand by, you know, reading the literature, reading the papers, that probably in our field, so the regeneration of bone tissue, periodontal tissue, the cells that seem the best ones probably are the mesenchymal stem cells. So where can we isolate them, for instance? I mean, do we have different tissues where we can isolate them? How does it work in practical terms?
Well, that's a good question, because in the oral cavity there are several sources where we can harvest the cells. For example, the alveolar bone, the gingiva, it can be the periodontal ligament, it can be the dental follicle or the apical papilla. And from all these tissues, we can isolate and expand mesenchymal stem cells that we can use in various clinical applications. For example, if it is bone or if it is bone regeneration or if it is periodontal regeneration, then you tend to use to prefer or select the source of origin.
Okay, so let's say maybe I'm just thinking for the future, so we can use waste products from surgeries, for instance. So you have extracted a tooth, or you have, I don't know, done a resective surgery, you have a piece of gingiva, you can use these type of tissues to isolate the cells.
Well, Elena, that's a great question, and that has been one of my interests, because I always thought, why remove the infectious infiltrated granulation tissue from a surgery where you can isolate stem cells from there and maybe use them in an application? So, yes, instead of throwing tissues, you can make the most out of them. But we are still in the process to determine how much of use it can be to use tissue that you would otherwise discard and use it in at the lowest morbidity for the patient for a clinical application.
And that would be a very efficient strategy, isn't it? So we don't waste anything, then we use everything from the same patient. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, that has been my interest to design treatments of autologous origin. So instead of using products that are available in the market, how can we trigger the innate healing potential of a patient and use his own tissues to trigger the dynamic potential of healing and augment the treatment outcome?
I guess there must be a great potential in it, because I also think that using your own tissues has probably the best potential to help you to build up whatever got lost. So we will see. And we are already in the clinical application and in the clinics. From a clinician point of view, I mean, it sounds very interesting, but in the other way, also a bit far away. So, there's always the term about tissue engineering, and this is based on the mesenchymal stem cells, but also biomolecules and also biomaterial scaffolds, which are considered to be an alternative to the periodontal and bone regeneration. And I'm wondering, where are we there with the tissue engineering?
Well, tissue engineering has been used in several intraoral applications, let's say for oral surgery to augment a sinus or to augment the alveolar ridge. It has been also used in periodontal case, in periodontitis case, but it is considered as a combined ATMP product, that is advanced treatment medicinal product, and as such you need authorization to use it in the clinic. So far, although there is extensive literature in animals and a few studies in humans, there are very few, if any, clinical trials in humans using tissue engineering products for periodontal regeneration or bone regeneration that have a sufficient sample size. And as far as regulatory authorities, there are very few products that have been authorized out in the market in Europe. And when you click and you visit their website, it says the marketing authorization has expired. Probably they cannot do good business. There is not, their application is not as a routine in the wide market, and so they don't pursue renewal of their marketing authorization. So although there has been going for many, many years research, we are still at starting point.
But just clinically, let's think it's already here, and we are ready in the clinic. Is it easy to use it? I mean, probably.
Well, in our study, that is a valid point, but because in our study we wanted to make operator friendly chairside application, and so it was very, very easy to bring everything together and produce the tissue engineer construct chairside by the bench. But that was a few years ago, and this is under regulatory limitations. And now the construct has to be delivered to the clinic ready from the laboratory, from the facility. And you cannot really assemble the different parts together chairside.
I guess chairside is the thing we need in the future, probably.
Yeah, and also, Danai, I mean, you already started discussing about that, but I think, you know, we are all excited about these potential future applications, but we need to realize that there are still some limitations related to cell therapy. So for sure, regulatory considerations, because you already mentioned it, how difficult it is, and I guess every country has different rules. And also from an ethical point of view, maybe, especially if it's not cells coming from the same patient, expenses. I don't know how expensive it is to put together all the cells, the scaffolds. So can you tell us maybe a little bit more about the current limitations of cell therapy?
Helena, we'll touch upon on every parameter that you mentioned, and keep me in the right track if you forget something. So in terms of regulatory, yes, you have to follow the SOPs. And now all the countries in Europe are synchronized with the European Medicinal Agency. So there are firm regulations that you have to follow. In terms of costs, indeed, they are very expensive because you require dedicated and sophisticated laboratory facilities. You need standard operating procedures even for the transportation of the product. And this raises the expenses. It can be between 20 or 40,000 euros. For a single application, but mind you, this is produced by companies, and there is a high amount of profit. What else? We talked about preparation. Yes, you need a dedicated laboratory facility compatible with good manufacturing practices. We talked about time frame. Yes, you need 2 to 3 weeks to prepare the end product. And you have to think about it that the surgery, the operating theater, has to be perfectly synchronized with the laboratory facility. And how easy can this be? And so, in other words, the clinical setting has to follow the laboratory readiness.
That looks challenging, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of challenges. I don't know how easy it's going to be to overcome them in the future, but as you showed us with your studies and the other studies that have been published, the potential is there, isn't it? So we just need to try to find a way to make it more, I don't know, user-friendly, probably.
I think that's one of the key points, I guess, to the application into the clinic. And as you said at the beginning, with it has to be chair side, maybe. I'm just saying maybe it could be. And also, as what Elena said, user-friendly, I guess.
So that was our goal, to have an operator-friendly procedure. So, you know, we had our scaffold. We loaded the cells onto the scaffold. It had to rest for a few good minutes. And then we cross-linked with calcium chloride and so that it became 3D solid before we transplanted it to intra-bony defects. But I don't think we can any longer do that because it all has to be assembled in the laboratory. So when the laboratory delivers the product, there will be more or less ready for use, ready for transplantation. And that is going to be even simpler. So in the hands of the surgeon, all you need to do is take the product, trim it to the desired directions, and actually place it in the defect. So there is another possibility that appeared in the literature, how you can bypass all these regulations and use a tissue micrograft. So I can very briefly explain in very few words that this is a device. You take your biopsy, it goes through this device and it's filtered with a cutoff point of microns. So everything passes through if it is under, let's say, 50 microns. And then you get this tissue micrograph that you can use. What is the limitation? That the stem cell population in this graft is only a very small fraction because they have not been expanded in a laboratory facility. But again, it gives you a sense of practicalities if you want to have something that is full of growth factors to use in your application.
And I think you also mentioned when we were discussing before recording, just informally, you were mentioning also the possibility of using allogenic cells, isn't it? So,
well, that could be the future. And for that, for several reasons. I mean, think about it. We have the ideal donor that we characterize. Let's say that we have the way to characterize an optimal biopsy. And from there, we isolate and we expand cells that can be stored in a bank. And they are ready for use. So I order the cells and they are ready for use. So in other terms, we cut down the costs because they are ready for use and they are stored. We cut down the time of preparation because I need them now. I can order them and they can be delivered now. I don't have to wait between biopsy uptake and delivery of the products in my clinic. And the other thing is that it could be used, the allogenic cells, they could be used by a blood transfusion institute instead of a company that even cuts down the costs even more. So there are different reasons that allogenic cells remain very promising in the future, but that has to be defined through research.
And probably they will work, as you said, more indirectly as well, these allogenic cells, mainly creating the environment for the host cells to actually regenerate, isn't it?
Well, that is the way it is supposed, it is considered to be, because it's like a factory of drugs. They are living cells and they produce so many growth factors and bioactive agents that will trigger the host cells to take over the repair or the regeneration. In terms of the allogenic cells, it can be easier for a periodontitis model because think about it, we have not one defect in the mouth, but we have many, probably more than two or three intraboni defects in the oral cavity that we want to treat with cells. Its surgery could be organized at a different time point, at a different stage of the life of the patient. And by having allogenic cells, it gives you somehow the flexibility to order upon demand.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. It's like you give the body a push to help himself, to say it very simple.
So maybe this is the ultimate future goal. If we can modulate the site, if we can reform a site and we reverse it, we control the inflammation and we reverse the tissues from where they started. And that could be even more interesting, but it remains to determine how we can achieve this.
Well, Danai, I think, I mean, you really made a very complex topic simple. So thank you very much for this inspiring conversation. You gave us like a window to the future. I have this feeling, you know, we already heard what is going to happen in the upcoming years, hopefully. And also we have learned about how this cell therapy probably works. So mainly in direct action instead of direct. You gave us an insight on tissue engineering, but also on the limitations associated with cell therapy. So again, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge. It was really a huge privilege to have you with us today.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, Anita, Anina and Elena. You made it so easy for me and you were great hostesses. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This was our Next Regeneration podcast. We discuss relevant topics in oral regeneration. I'm Elena.
And I am Anina. Thank you very much for listening.
Subscribe to our monthly podcast if you don't want to miss a new episode.
You can find us on the Osteology website, on Apple Podcast, and on Spotify.
We are looking forward to next time.